Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 91. Tom Woods is back, and he's sharing all of his secrets on how to be your own boss.
Mixing business with politics. This is the Nathan Fraser Show.
All right, Free Market Squad, in the place to be. Thank you for taking a half hour out of your day to hang with me and my very special guest today. We've got Tom Woods. It's been so long since we had Tom on the podcast. Super excited to have him back. Tom, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Nathan. Glad to be here.
Okay, so I did a really quick intro because I don't think any of my listeners need to be introduced to Tom Woods. You probably 15 levels of fame above me, but for maybe the one listener in the audience who doesn't know who you are, can you kind of just let people know who you are and what you're all about?
Well, I'm the one guy with a Harvard degree and a Columbia PhD you wouldn't mind having lunch with, put it that way. I've written a bunch of books, a couple of New York Times bestsellers, libertarian books. I've sort of been a popularizer of libertarian ideas, but I've had my own little innovations here and there. And during the Ron Paul, you know, those heady days of the Ron Paul campaigns, I was opening for him as a speaker in many different locations. And I spoke at the great Rally for the Republic in front of all those many, many people. And I have my own podcast now, The Tom Woods Show, which is in excess of 1,000 episodes. Give away a lot of free books at tomsfreebooks.com. But basically, I just churn out content like a fanatic.
You do. You're probably one of the, especially in the podcasting world, but in the Liberty Media world, you're probably, I don't know if there's anybody that does as much as you as far as content creation.
Yeah, I don't know. Stefan Molyneux is pretty darn productive. But okay. Anyway, but I appreciate the thought.
So I actually wanted to kind of talk about content creation. I wanted to have you on to go a little bit different direction than what you're usually putting out there, because as well as being a very politically active guy, as well as being a thought leader in politics, you're also a brilliant business guy. And I wanted to have you on to talk about that, maybe mix the two topics up a lot or a little bit. We'll see. But a lot of people maybe don't know how much of, or maybe don't appreciate how much of a brilliant business person you are. So instead of talking about politics, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about is your business model, your business mindset, and how much of a role does taking what you're doing and applying a business mindset to it play in your everyday life?
That really is my everyday life, really. I mean, I do my episode every day, and then I think of ways to get the word out better or to, you know, help fund the household here a bit more effectively, things like that. But that to me is actually the most fun of all, because I've gotten to learn all kinds of interesting skills. For example, I just brought on to my team another copywriter, that is to say, somebody else who writes marketing copy. And I was blown away when I would send him samples of what I've been writing and saying, look, I want you to write something kind of like this. And he says, what, you want me to write master copy? Because this is perfect. He said, every word of this is perfect. So maybe I'm actually better at it than I think, because I brought this guy on thinking, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm not really that good and I need help and whatever. And he's saying, I don't think I could do what you're doing. So maybe I'm just, goes to show, you practice something a lot, you can maybe get good at it without realizing it. Because what I do every single day, in addition to my episode, is I send out an email to at least one of my two email lists. And lately I've been sending out, well, sometimes three emails a day, actually. You say, oh, Woods, don't send out three emails a day. All right, take that advice and roll it up into a ball and throw it away, because it's terrible advice. If you write good emails, people look forward to getting them and they open them. So what I do every day is I try to send out an email to my libertarian list, and that will maybe promote one of my paid products, but sometimes it's just, I want to stay in contact and have people not forget about me, or I promote my other list, or I'm always up to something, or I'm getting them over to my website to listen to one of my episodes, and the episode has an ad in it or something like that. But it's good content with interesting topics covered every time. Like, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I sent out an email. It was a little quiz, and here are excerpts from academic journal articles, real live. These are real article excerpts, actual human beings wrote these, but one of them's a fake. Which one's the fake? Nobody could figure it out because they're all crazy sounding. So people enjoy stuff like that. So it's not a problem to do that. But then my other list is more of like an internet marketing list. And so I'll email people and I'll say, here are the three affiliate programs that have been the most lucrative for me. Well, who's not going to open that email? You'd be crazy. But then also I send out subject lines like, Jordan Peterson strikes back at Kathy Newman. Okay, well, what's that about? So they open it up, and then I will transition from Jordan Peterson into whatever it is I'm promoting. I'll say, now, look, it's true Jordan Peterson went very far with television and stuff, but if it hadn't been for the internet, there's no way he'd become the sensation he is now. And then I use that to segue into whatever the product is that I'm promoting. So in other words, I get people to open the emails because they know it's going to be interesting. There's a provocative subject line that does deliver, so it's not clickbait. And it's not just, oh, here's this product I told you about yesterday. Well, it's still around and it's still 50% off. And then tomorrow I send them another message. Remember that thing? It's still 50% off. People will stop opening emails like that. Mm-hmm. So after a while, you figure out, if I want people to read what I'm writing, I better get good at this. And I better get unusual at it.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that you're really good at, and probably because you have studied immensely under one of our mutual friends, Ben Settle.
Yeah.
One of the things that you're really great at is the indirect lead-in, where you start off with something that grabs the attention and is really hard to ignore, and then you kind of slowly transition into what you're
Can I give an example?
Yeah,
can I give
absolutely.
Give a quick example. The other day, somebody sent me a video of a guy who claimed in all seriousness that he had been part of a secret government time travel program and that he had gone ahead into the year 6,000 and he had come back to tell us what the year 6,000 was like. So here we are all set to hear what he has to say. And all he has to say are the most empty platitudes, like, we've solved a lot of global problems. What? That's what you're going to tell me? You know, and yeah, it's there's like a lot of artificial intelligence. Yeah. Okay. I could have guessed that. Why are you telling me this? So anyway, I wrote a little email about the absurdity of this video. And I said, look, folks, you know, none of us going to live to the year 6,000, but I would just be glad if I could drag a lot of my readers into the year 2018. Because in 2018, people know how they can make a living right off their laptop with e-commerce and blah, blah, blah. And there, I'm off to the races. I just used the year as the segue, mm-hmm. and I'm off to the races.
Yeah, I think you're, again, I see a lot of Ben Settle's teachings in what you do, and I think you're, when you told me that you hired a copywriter, I was like, why?
Yeah, and it turns out really only because sometimes I do promotions where I need to email so much that either I can ruin my family time by constantly having to duck out and write an email, or I can just pay a little money to somebody and just have a free day. And I think I'd rather do that. So I've actually been sending out emails written by other people.
Uh-oh.
A few times. Nobody noticed so far.
Well, and that's one of the things that you have to learn as a business owner. You have to realize that at some point, your money is less valuable than your time.
Yeah, my time is so precious to me. So, yeah, there you get to a point where you say, I mean, like even things like editing my podcast episodes. That just took me a long time to do. And I realized that if I had somebody else do it, I would be freed up to do things that are more value productive for me or more enjoyable for me. I mean, there are audio people who love doing stuff like that. I didn't really love doing it. It was drudgery for me. So that's been the hardest transition for me, because up to now I've been thinking, but I save money if I do it myself. I save money if I make that YouTube video and do all the editing myself. And it is true in a crude sense, you do. But really, you don't. Of course, you lose out on leisure, and it's hard to know how to price that. But a lot of times, there are things that somebody could do for me for $30, and in that time, I could earn $150. So why would I not pay the $30?
Yeah, and you also have to realize you can always make money back, but you can never make the time back.
Yeah, absolutely right.
So I have a question for you. This is going to go back. Oh gosh, this is going to go back to Chris Cantwell days, way back in the day, before he went off the deep end. I remember reading a conversation between you and him, and he was talking about how he was trying to monetize his content and monetize his activism, and you said that that was kind of a fool's errand, and You weren't a big fan of promoting that people try to monetize their political activism, but you've done an incredibly successful job of doing just that. Has your position on that changed, or would you care to kind of clarify your position on that?
Well, I don't know what I was thinking at that time. I was wrong about that. I guess I would modify that to say most people are unsuccessful with it. Because they are. I think most people are unsuccessful at monetizing what they're doing when it comes to promoting political ideas or, you know, political philosophical ideas they support. They're not successful with it. Some of them think, I'll write a book and I'll retire on the royalties, and they just have no idea what is involved with book publishing and what how little you tend to earn with most books. But and of course, people who thought I'll monetize YouTube videos found out very quickly what happens when you rely on somebody else's platform to generate your income. You have no control over that platform, and they can demonetize you just like that. But there are people who have large audiences, like Stefan Molyneux, who I have no idea what he earns, but I feel safe in saying that he probably earns a fair amount. And people will say, but he has a big audience. But you can't act like having a big audience is some random fact of life that just emerges out of nowhere. He started with no audience at all, like everybody else. He just worked at it, and got to where he is now. So it can be done, but I think it's hard to do. A lot of people try to do it through having a website, and they put, you know, ads on it. But ads make a lot of money for Matt Drudge because he has millions and millions and millions and millions of people viewing that site every single day. If you don't, then chances are you're going to earn 17 cents on those banner ads. So that's one mistake. Another one is people use the Amazon affiliate program. Now that can work for you, but again, it's not going to probably substitute for your job anyway. So there are ways to monetize things that are not going to be very lucrative. You can monetize what you're doing via a podcast if you build up an audience, you know what you're doing, and you pitch things to them that are relevant to their lives, or you have enough of an audience that you can actually get paying sponsors. That can be done, but bear in mind, as with the statistic you hear about all the new businesses that fail, I don't know what the statistic is with podcasting, but it's something like most podcasts never get past episode number 7. I think it's partly because people want instant results, and podcasting can be quite a long slog. Now, what I've done to monetize what I'm doing, that is, in other words, monetize the libertarian side of what I do, is I created a product that at least some libertarians wanted based on what I knew they liked about me. One of the things I figured out people like about me is that I'll take an article and I'll critique it. And they like seeing these critiques. They like these smackdowns. So what if I taught courses in areas that I'm qualified to teach, because I have a, you know, terminal degree in U.S. history, and it had that sort of tone to it, that I'm just smacking down misconceptions left and right. What if I created a whole website where other people who are trustworthy, and I did this in other fields too, and that became libertyclassroom.com, and that's a membership site. It's an annual thing, and people stay members for years. Sometimes they get the lifetime membership, and that does very, very well. Or I become an affiliate for products that are likely going to be relevant to my listeners. Any libertarian audience is going to have some homeschoolers in it. Well, I helped to create the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum. So I can promote ronpaulhomeschool.com to my audience and be able to say, honestly, I have firsthand experience with this program, not only because my daughters use it, but also because I created 400 of the videos in it. So you can know that it's good, and that I'm not just promoting it for the commission money. I have a stake in it. And that has done very well because at ronpaulhomeschool.com, I also added bonuses. If you order it through me, I get the affiliate commission. You get a lot of free bonuses. You get one of my books autographed. You get the Liberty Classroom membership. You get a bunch of things for free just for joining through my link. So if you think that way, if you think about who's my audience, what are the problems they're having, and how can I help solve them, then you can start thinking, or even watch what I do. Just watch what I do, because if you're a libertarian and you have an audience, chances are it's going to be somewhat similar to mine. What I'm doing is working. Maybe you could give it a try.
A good advertisement is like a good story. It pulls your prospect in, takes them on a journey, and delivers them to a buying decision. Too bad most ads suck. Most ads come off as hypey and salesy. Even worse, they come off as boring or confusing. Most business owners suck at writing ads, and most shoppers have learned to tune them out completely. Want the secret formula I use for writing my ads? You want your ads to stand out from all the noise? Want to know 9 foundational elements that make up a compelling piece of sales copy? Would you like some of the best editing tips I use to keep people reading what I write? Want it all for free? Well, I've got you covered. Head on over to copyandfunnels.com/guide and download your free advertiser's cheat sheet today. That's copyandfunnels.com/guide. Download your free guide and start getting more sales from your ads today. copyandfunnels.com/guide. I'm going to kind of come back and touch on a couple things you brought up, but I want to lead the conversation in a different direction real quick. We've seen, especially over the last year or so, a lot of political content creators kind of blow up. We've seen some people, one of my favorite examples is like Scott Adams. He's taken his political ideals and ideas about the atmosphere and kind of rebranded himself and created a lot of buzz for himself. What you've done has been pretty phenomenal from an outside perspective. We've also seen a lot of examples of when political activism just completely ruins a business. And I know that you come from academia and the whole SJW culture in academia is just destroying a lot of academia's credibility, but in Hollywood and entertainment, that same culture is kind of infested. Marvel Comics has seen one of the worst years. Comic book stores are closing left and right all over the country. SJW movies like Star Wars just plummeted in its revenue and its ratings. And we've seen this activism kind of take place in other business models, and it seems to be completely destroying the business models. What's your thoughts on, I guess, activism where it has the potential to destroy a business?
I don't know. In that case, what you're dealing with is what economists would think of as consumption, that the people running the business get some kind of value out of that's non-monetary, obviously, out of promoting things they believe in. So in the same way that you hear occasionally about these firms where they'll say, okay, everybody in the firm now is going to earn at least $70,000 a year, regardless. Well, that's in a way a form of consumption. They get some kind of utility out of doing that. But to me, if I see that something is just not working, I just don't do it. I would have no problem separating my professional life from my personal life. I don't have to give a libertarian lecture to everybody who comes into my grocery store. First of all, I believe that the existence of my grocery store is almost all the libertarian lecture they need. Look at this amazing cornucopia of goods, that, you know, from all over the place, produced by so many different hands and here at your service at low prices. That's pretty much all I need to tell them. But I don't feel like in a business, for instance, you have to be constantly harping on the fact that you're libertarian either. But what's interesting, though, I asked this kind of question to the fellow who's the CEO of Overstock.com, Patrick Byrne, and I asked him, you're very vocally libertarian. I mean, you speak at Mises Institute events, you're a presence out there, and is there ever a fear that you have that you're going to compromise the business because people will say, aha, look, he's a heretic, let's go boycott Overstock.com? And he said, nah, he said, partly because I couldn't stop myself even if I wanted to, so... You got to take the good with the bad. And as it's turned out, I don't think Overstock has ever run into any problems. So you just never know. You got to, you know, just test it out. But yeah, the SJW thing, that's just a case of people who are in a bubble who think everybody thinks the way they do. Like, these are the people who say, I never even met anybody who was thinking of voting for Trump. Well, that means you live in a bubble and you think everybody's going to love your whatever, your propaganda, and they don't.
And one of the things, and I'd like to get your take on this, one of the things that I've realized is that, or maybe something that I speculate, a lot of people that come from our kind of political slant, we understand, or at least we have an appreciation for market desires. And a lot of these people on the opposite end, they actually disdain market desires. They disdain the market system. They disdain the idea of supply and demand. And so I think that might have that might play a role in some of the really bad business decisions they're making.
Yeah, maybe it's the same kind of mentality that we saw in modernism, in art, where there was a clear contempt for the consuming public. The consuming public is too stupid to appreciate our art. We're certainly not going to cater to these stupid rubes. And so the result of that, of course, is support for, you know, government support for the arts, because obviously the stupid rubes are too dumb to get the value of what we're producing. So we'll take the money from them indirectly and we'll reward ourselves that way. That, you know, you could take a wild guess how I feel about that.
So when it comes to creating content that does have a political slant to it and having it work in with your business model, do you have any concerns? I know that it's very popular now to attack people's businesses, call them Nazis, call them white supremacists and bigots. And I just recently somebody attacked my marketing agency trying to get me fired from my own business because of a rap song that I did when I was a kid. They brought it up and brought it to my business and was like, you should fire this guy because he did this song 15 years ago where he talks about having sex with groupies. This idea of taking people's personal beliefs or personal discrepancies in the past and trying to attack their livelihood, is that something that you worry about as a creator?
Once in a while, I do. I think I'm not a big enough fish for most people to be worried about. I don't, like, if I go to a college campus, almost never, I wouldn't say never, but almost never do I run into any problem because I'm just not well known enough. And because I've gotten to a point in my life where the desire I had as a younger man to get larger and larger audiences and to get bigger and bigger thrills has really died down. I'm much more domestic now. I'm just happy to be with the kids and stuff. And that's what is rewarding for me. So I'm not constantly on the lookout for how do I make the audience bigger and bigger. I mean, I do some things to try to make it bigger, but I'm not desperate to get on television or, you know, getting on people's cases about getting me on their podcast and whatever. If things come up, I'm glad to do it, but I don't worry about it for myself, but it is a problem because the hysteria, which is all in one direction, is a very real thing, and I think it needs to be documented and ridiculed so as to make it maybe marginally harder to do to people.
Back to your podcast and some of the content that you create, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I would like to know for people out there that are interested in content marketing, because I think, again, I think you're a master at taking your content and putting it into a business model. What are some of the most lucrative ways that you've been able to monetize your podcast and content generated around it?
Well, the nice thing is that even though I do have the occasional sponsor, it's not really essential to the show. I mean, it's sort of for the Woods Emergency Fund for when the kids need surgery or something. So if they ever came after me and tried to hurt me in terms of sponsors, they wouldn't really be touching me at all, which is very satisfying. So the different things that I've done, for one thing, Patreon is a really good idea. I'm not on Patreon because I have my own platform. I could not believe the domain name supportinglisteners.com was available. So I bought supportinglisteners.com. Some people think that's a platform that a lot of podcasters use. No, it's just me. It's just for my show. And so what I did with that was I opened it up to the listeners and I said, if you want to help support the show, I will give you some really good benefits. And when you've been writing books and doing as much as I have for so many years, you have a lot of things to give away. I have books to give away, courses to give away, memberships to give away, and I have coupon codes if you shop at different libertarian retailers, you know, things like that. But what's interesting in terms of what's lucrative, I would say the benefit that I added that generated the biggest buzz and the best result, I never in a million years would have guessed if I hadn't tested it out. And that is, I created a Facebook group for people who support the show. And that, more than anything else I did, generated enthusiasm. People wanted to join. They didn't care about the other benefits I was offering, a lot of them. They just wanted to be in that Facebook group. And you hit a certain level in a Facebook group, and it runs itself. That community completely runs itself. I could leave for 5 years. Nobody even noticed I was gone. They all know each other. They all like each other. And we kind of all know this person is sort of like the, I don't know, the house lefty, but we love anyway. And this one is like a left libertarian, but occasionally surprises you, you know? And so we love that guy and whatever. We all kind of know each other and it really works. So that definitely just hanging out, you're putting a sign out front saying you can support me in the following way. So most people use Patreon for that. I highly recommend that. Look at what other podcasters are doing. What are the bonuses they're giving away? Because you may think, I don't have any bonuses. How could I reward people at different contribution levels? Look at what other people are doing. You will get ideas. So that's one thing. The other thing definitely is promoting products as an affiliate. So I already mentioned the Ron Paul curriculum. Okay, that's a $250 product per year, and you get a 50% commission on it. So that's pretty good. It's well worth my while. It was well worth my while to make up bonuses that people get if they order it through me. I created a whole course actually as another bonus just for people who order through my link. And that took me like 2 days. And now I can use that forever. So think that way. Why should people order something through you? Make it worth their while. Or I use Bluehost web hosting and I say, you want to start a website? Well, use my link to get your hosting and I'll give you a shout out for your website on my show. I have a lot of listeners on my show. You'll get a burst of free traffic. I'll get you boosted in the search engines by linking from my website to yours. I'll give you a couple of dozen video tutorials to help you get up and running. And I'll give you membership in another private Facebook group I have for bloggers so that you, if you ever run into trouble or you need help or whatever, we're all in there to help you. So that's and these bonuses, what did they cost me? I mean, basically rounded off to zero. Those bonuses don't cost me anything. But so that's what I would say is lucrative because Bluehost has a very attractive affiliate program as well. And then I think of affiliate programs for products that may not be exclusively of interest to my listeners, but would be of interest to pretty much anybody. And one of them is a company called Rocket Languages. I love that company. We have the Japanese is an impossible language, but my daughter has their Japanese program. She's very, very interested in Japan. So we got that for her. And it turns out I didn't even know. My friend Mark Ling actually co-founded that company. I didn't even know it. I was on a webinar with him, and he was going through ClickBank showing all the products that were his. And we got to this French language program from Rocket Languages. He said, yeah, that's mine. I said, wait a minute, hold on. You run Rocket Languages too? So it turns out I've known the guy the whole time. But Rocket Languages is a great, you can become an affiliate of theirs over at ClickBank.com. They're a great affiliate program because maybe like a half dozen times per year, they have a big sale with scarcity. They'll say the next 1,000 courses are 60% off. And they update every hour how many courses are left before it goes back to the regular price. That kind of scarcity. If you just say to people, oh, go get a foreign language course. Well, maybe they will, maybe they won't. But if you say to them, it's only the next 212 courses that are marked off 60%, they will go over and get it. So they know how to sell courses for you. And once you sign up to promote, they email you and they'll say, okay, here's our Labor Day promotion coming up. Get ready for this. Tell your listeners or your readers or anybody that we're going to be offering 60% off the first 1,000. And you get very, very attractive commission payments from Rocket Languages because it's pretty much a digital program. So they can afford to give you, they're not sending physical products through the mail. They can afford to give you big commissions. So those would be ones that I would recommend.
Nice. When it comes to I'm going to step it back. I'm just going to say, when you were talking about bonuses, I recently just launched a website. I launched a website for copy and funnels, and I actually don't really like WordPress, and I have a server of my own since I actually run a software as a service. I have my own server. The only reason I went with your affiliate was exclusively to get a shout out from you. So it was a great example of the bonus is actually what
sold it. The bonus makes, but yeah. There are many times I bought a product and, you know, to heck with the product, I want this bonus. Yeah, absolutely. And now maybe it could be that WordPress isn't ideal, but I have so little experience and all I've ever used is WordPress that I feel like I don't even want to know. Don't even tell me, right? I'm happy in my ignorance and I want to state it.
No, that's fine. But it is a good example of what you do, your bonus material when you promote something. A lot of people, when they do affiliate programs, they're like, well, this is the affiliate program and you should buy it for me so that I can get a cut of the profit. And you're always putting out all kinds of additional things. You give people a reason why they should get it from you rather than everybody else with the same affiliate program.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and sometimes it can be just something like, if it's some product that might be a little tricky for somebody, make a 20-minute quick start video where you use something like Screencast-O-Matic, which is free or cheap, and you just show them step by step, here's how you get started doing this. And that is actually one of the bonuses people like the most, is if it's anything that's complicated, walk me through it. A walkthrough is worth more than all these irrelevant bonuses you might come up with.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to change the direction just a little bit real quick. When it comes to repurposing content, you are a master at this. I've seen so much stuff where you just squeeze every bit of leverage out of every piece of content that you create. What's your, I guess, plan or maybe some ideas that you have or some ways that you go about picking and choosing how you're going to repurpose what content?
Well, so far, well, for instance, this isn't quite what you're asking, but I'll get to it. When I did that supporting listeners website, I just thought of what are things I've made that I've used that I've sold, for instance, that I could now give away to donors. So they serve a new purpose. They're brought back to life. What's a product I've made that I could use as a bonus, stuff like that. But the main way I repurpose content is I'll take an episode. I get transcripts done of my interviews that I do on the podcast, not the solo episodes, because I don't really want to see what my rambling prose for 45 minutes would look like on paper. But when I do interviews, I have transcripts made and my supporting listeners get access to those transcripts. Well, once I've got them as transcripts, they now are a written product. They're a different kind of product, a different kind of person, or people who like to consume things in a different way. Not everybody likes podcasts. A lot of people don't have time to listen. They'd rather just glance at the written version. So I will take a bunch of podcast transcripts that are of a similar theme and make them into an ebook. So I've done one on healthcare, for example. I love the title of that book. Ben Settle actually made an article about it in his newsletter because he loved the title, which was "Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Healthcare." You know, and he says, "Look, that's a template anybody could use. Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Blank." You can use that forever. So I was flattered when Ben said that he liked that one. So there's that. Or I realized that I had done a bunch of episodes hitting on topics that were really dear to Bernie Sanders' heart. So I thought if I just do a few more, just to finish it out, I would have an entire reputation of Bernie Sanders in writing. So that's where the website BernieIsWrong.com came from. I just put up a ebook about Bernie Sanders. So that's what I do. I'll take this stuff, it's just sitting there, and I'll give it a brand new audience. And what this does is because at the end of each of these transcripts, I tell people, look, if you like this content, I'm producing this every single weekday, go subscribe. So it can bring in some new listeners, but more importantly, it brings in subscribers to my email list. You got to give me your email address so I can send you the book. And that's the exchange we make.
Nice. And I like the fact that you have your content feed into the other content kind of in a reciprocal pattern where you're in your podcast, you tell people to go get the ebook. In your ebook, you tell people how they can subscribe to the podcast. You're kind of
exactly
coming
yep.
at people from all angles.
Right.
Nice. So we're about to close up. Do you have any tips for liberty-minded entrepreneurs out there? Do you have anything, if you could tell people, one, what you would think is the most important thing if you're trying to start a business and you're also a liberty-minded type person, what would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, maybe this will be a disappointing answer, but it's kind of the answer I would give when people would say, I want to get a PhD in history. What's the most libertarian university I can attend? I would never really answer that question because I would tell them that's the wrong way to think about it. I would say what you want is the most prestigious degree you possibly qualify for. Get that and then go do what you want to do. So I would say, you know, go to the University of Wisconsin, which has a top history program, or go to Columbia or Yale or Harvard or something. Do that and pay your dues, get the best degree you can, and that will position you well. Well, likewise for libertarians, you know, we're still small in number. And it's not necessarily the case that you're going to directly make your living by catering to libertarians. Maybe as a libertarian entrepreneur, you're just an entrepreneur who happens to be a libertarian. And you basically figure out what it is that the consuming public that you have the biggest connection with needs, solve that problem. And if you're successful, then in your leisure time, you can do anything you want for the liberty movement, and you can donate the profits from some of your paying ventures. But I'm not sure that, I mean, again, I'm not saying you can't make a buck by spreading ideas that you believe in, but it's a lot harder than making a buck by catering to needs that most people have, and then taking some of those bucks and supporting libertarians with them.
No, I think that's the perfect answer. That's probably what I would say as well. First of all, thank you so much for coming on. I know that you're a busy guy. You have a lot on your plate, and I really appreciate you taking the time for my audience. Where can people go? I want to let people know about the podcast that you create, and I want to send people to Paths to Income. I want you to tell people a little bit about that as well.
Okay, so tomwoods.com has all my stuff on it. That's where you can, and particularly on the place you can get every single episode I've ever done, all on one page in your browser, is tomwoods.com/episodes. That's my favorite page of the whole site. So that's where you'd go for that. And then in terms of the Paths to Income thing, I wrote an ebook. Now, this one I wrote from scratch. These are not transcripts. I wrote this thing lovingly from scratch, and I think it's really good. It's got a lot of detail in it. It's five different ways you can earn some dough online. So one of them is affiliate marketing, like we talked about. So I talk in there about some of the strategies we were talking about here. Podcasting is one. Self-publishing is one. So I got five of these, along with step-by-step how-to instructions and monetization strategies. So that is available over at, because it's called Five Paths to an Online Income, and you can find it at pathstoincome.com.
Nice. All right, Tom, it's been a pleasure having you on the show again, and hopefully it won't be so long in between now and the next time. TomWoods.com. It's a fantastic podcast, Paths to Income. Go get the ebook, and it is an ebook, correct?
It is.
Awesome. And what do they have to do? Do they have to pay you, or is it?
Oh, it costs nothing. But you got to give me your email address. But other than that, it costs you nothing.
Nice. And then once you're on his email list, you'll learn from one of the masters about how to write persuasive email copy. So that's a bonus as well.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Awesome. Thank you, Tom. And we will talk to you later. TomWoods.com, PathsToIncome.com. We are out of here, Free Market Squad. Deuces. All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Tom Woods. Always a fantastic guest. And if you did, and you're a liberty-minded type entrepreneur, and you're living in the Denver metro area, I want to let you know about something. Tomorrow evening, which will be the 7th of March 2018, Wednesday night, I'm going to be giving a talk with Liberty on the Rocks. Liberty on the Rocks is a libertarian type group. We get together, we have some drinks, we discuss libertarian ideals. It's a really great community, and they invited me to talk and do a discussion on entrepreneurship done the right way. We're going to be talking about the five most common mistakes that newbie entrepreneurs make when they start up their first business. And it's going to be a fun talk. It's going to be a great networking opportunity. You'll be able to meet a lot of like-minded people there. So if you're a libertarian, if you're a business owner, if you're in the Denver metro area, make sure to head on down to Chopper's Sports Grill tomorrow on South Madison Street in Denver, Colorado. And you can check out Liberty on the Rocks or Denver Liberty on the Rocks for more information on that. Again, it'll be tomorrow, March 7th, 2018. We'll be talking about the five most common mistakes that newbie business owners make when they open up their first business. All right. I hope to see you there. My name's Nathan Frazier. I'm the High Priest of Propaganda. I'm out of here, Free Market Squad. Deuces.